Blog Talk Radio.
We're on the show with Steve Wimberly, executive producer, director of Pepper Tree Films. He studied at Emory University and also Emory University Business School and Howard University. He is the author of Killing Atticus Finch, which is a Don Siegelman documentary, how an innocent man was politically assassinated by some of the most notorious names in American politics. Hey, Steve, you on? Hello, Steve, you there? Hello, we have some technical difficulties. Hold on 1 second. Steve?
This is Coach Wiles.
Oh, okay. Hold on 1 second, Coach. I'm trying to get Steve on the line.
Yeah, put him on. I'm just listening.
Okay. Hey, just hold on. Hello, Steve? Hello? Steve, you there? Steve, you on? Hello?
Hi, this is Steve. I can't come to the phone right now, but if you leave your name and number, I'll call you.
Me okay? Hello?
I got you now, buddy. Yes, I got you now.
Oh, good.
I was having some problems there at first. Yeah, I was just, I just got through finished reading off of what it is you're all about. So we're going to get into and ask you some questions about the Don Sigelman situation. First of all, I want to ask you about the irony of Don being in jail for trying to do the exact same things that this Republican supermajority is trying to fighting for right now down in Montgomery, Alabama, while he's in prison in another state for trying to do the exact same thing. I just want to get your thoughts on that before we leap into this documentary.
Sure. Well, you know, it is ironic. I mean, he is in jail for a crime that it's the first time in the history of American jurisprudence that someone has been convicted of bribery when the money that was actually given was a donation to a 501c3. And the real problem with it, of course, was the judge at the time, who was a known Sigelman rival and opponent, gave jury instructions that if there were any quid pro quo, that they should consider him guilty, which, of course, is, you know, that's giving the wrong jury instructions. So the stack was the deck was stacked against him from the very beginning. I mean, before he even went into all, I mean, before he was tried for bribery, they investigated him for years and years. So they went fishing for something, but never could find anything. So they had to trump up a charge. They had to create false charges against him. And that's what they wound up finding was nothing, but they trumped it up to make it appear as though it was a charge. So he is in jail for something that no one has ever considered as a crime, and he's still in jail. This wasn't a slap on the wrist or he is spending. I think it's a 7.5 years. He's not going to be out or completely through with the jury with the criminal justice system until 2022, I think. It is a very long time. He's still in jail in Louisiana. So it is ironic that the people who put him there are guilty of the corruption while he's in jail. So to answer your question, it is very ironic.
Yes, it is. It's more of that Alabama politics in which the statement that I find in the documentary to be one of the truest and one we need to seriously look at is the statement by a former Congressman Parker Griffin when he said that Dunn was a victim because they could not beat him fairly. They beat him with corruption in the court system.
So true, so true. He has been a real help to Don as well. What's really is surprising is that he can, you know, he was a liberal Democrat in a very Republican state. I say liberal. He was really a moderate Democrat in a very conservative state, and yet he kept winning. I mean, he was the only person in history to have all four statewide offices. Attorney General, Lieutenant Governor, Secretary of State, and of course, Governor. And he was someone they just couldn't beat. Even his opponents said, you know, we just can't get rid of him. He's like, I think they even used the term cockroach, which, you know, was not a nice term and very opposite of who he is. But they just couldn't get rid of him. They couldn't beat him in the poll. And they just couldn't get rid of him. So they had to find another way to, you know, to seize power, and that was just to trump up charges and put him in jail for something he didn't do, for a crime that doesn't exist.
Yeah, Intercar Lowe's is just the man for the job.
Exactly. Everyone's familiar with Karl Rove as, you know, the President Bush's chief political strategist. But before he was with Bush, he was in Alabama. That he even has a home in Alabama, and he represented many clients there, including an attorney general at one time who began investigating Sigelman right as soon as he entered office, as soon as Governor Sigelman entered office. I mean, before they could get the phone system straightened out and, you know, the desks and chairs in order, they began investigating him, sending him subpoenas for all his financial information. you know, before he could have done anything wrong. You know, he's only, you know, only been in there for, you know, a few weeks. And the investigations kept coming. And Karl Rove was also a, he was, one of his clients was Bill Riley and several other Republican candidates. And he also, you know, his partner at the time was Bill Canary. And they, you know, using his White House privilege and power, he was able to install, Karl Rove was able to install so many of his, I guess, minions is the best way to say it, you know, into powerful positions such as prosecutors. Like, you know, when they filed charges against Don Siegelman a second time, it was brought on by Laura Canary, who was the wife of his opponent's campaign manager. I mean, can you imagine? You know, if, and then yet she said that there was no conflict of interest. So Karl Rove has his hands and fingerprints. He has his fingerprints and tentacles wrapped around all of this. And
yeah, and he was. I feel like he was sitting here. I believe this plan was a long range plan. Karl Rove came here to lay the groundwork to organize this whole thing that they was going to pull off. And if you just go back and look, you look at the Alabama criminal justice system, even at the state appeals level. You look at how the makeup that we had before Karl Rove started wrapping those tentacles. Then all of a sudden we have a very conservative Supreme Court and appeals court. So they're going to meet, and just like now, what he's going through now, they got a person installed at every single level to meet the Don Siegelman case. That's why this should just be thrown out, and it should be, if not thrown out, he should have it a day with the Supreme Court.
Yes,
I find striking is how can one man, and that's Judge Bill Pryor, how can he seal up some records of an election for something, so any election, but an election so important as governor when there's suspicion surrounding an election? I mean, those ballots should be counted. They should be unsealed, and that would dispel a lot or prove a lot.
Yes.
But yet,
absolutely.
And the order to remain sealed.
Yes, absolutely. And I guess for those who don't are not familiar with it, it was the 2002 election for governor when he was cited as the, you know, the election night. Many news outlets called him, you know, as the winner of the election. And then in the middle of the night, unbeknownst to anyone, at 4 o'clock in the morning, a supposed computer glitch on these new electronic voting machines switched 6,000 votes from Siegelman's column into Riley's column, who's also a Karl Rove client. And the attorney general threatened to throw anybody in jail that attempted to do a recount. And then they later said that they did their own recount, but without a Democratic official present. And the, of course, as I mentioned, the attorney general threatened to throw everybody in jail if they even attempted to do a recount. And
that's one of the biggest problems, that if that amount of votes just came up out of anywhere, why didn't it affect any of the other races? That's mathematically virtually impossible. That just all of a sudden,
exactly,
those extra votes show up in just that race for the guy who, you know, everybody else had called lost, the Associated Press. It was over. But all of a sudden, here comes 6,000 votes for one person that didn't even affect any of the other races. So
if
the ballot came up different overnight, then that whole entire race needs to be recounted.
Yes,
I mean,
yes, absolutely.
That was on the ballot at that time.
Yes, I know, and well said. And also, it should be mentioned that Bill Pryor, who was the attorney general that threatened to throw everybody in jail, later was appointed by Karl Rove a couple of years later to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in Atlanta. And despite he had never sat on the bench before, he had never been a judge before, but yet he was appointed, or Rove in the Bush White House had him appointed during a recess appointment to the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, the 11th Circuit in Atlanta, where Siegelman's appeal is now being considered. So that's it's just crazy,
groundwork. They got all the players and all the henchmen in the right places to meet Dunn at every legal level.
Yes, they can they can completely turn around the rule of law at every level. They can subvert the law from lower courts all the way up to, well, now the Supreme Court. The United States,
yeah,
they have their people in place.
Yeah, you are absolutely correct. And it goes to what Al Gore had to say about the situation. If they're that powerful, or not powerful, corrupt, and powerfully corrupt, and corrupted with absolute power, but Dunn Siegelman isn't just fighting for his freedom, he's fighting for the integrity of the democracy, just like Al Gore said.
So true. So true, and this is we have lots of evidence to show that there was tampering going on there and many other places, and we're doing a documentary to expose it. We feel we have enough to show an audience that would be interested in knowing the truth. We're anxious to show them, what we have, and show that democracy has been compromised in more than one place, and more than, in multiple times. And we want to expose the people who did it.
Absolutely, one of the worst, because as you say in the documentary, the whole story of how former Alabama Governor Dunn Siegelman was railroaded in the prison remains unknown to most of the public. So that's why this is, I think, one of the most important documentaries that's coming out there when it comes to justice. This is one of the most important, especially with Dunn being America's number one political prisoner. That's exactly what he is. He's a political prisoner put there by his opponents, who had a $20 million war chest from Native Americans from outside of Alabama. And now he sits in what amounts to one of these government secret prisons. I mean, way in Louisiana, in solitary confinement.
Yes.
Punishment.
Absolutely. And that $20 million that you mentioned came from the Choctaw tribe, or not Choctaw, it was the Indian, the casinos in Mississippi, which made a lot of their money from people in Alabama. They would travel across to go to the casinos and spend the weekend gambling. So they had a stake in keeping Alabamans happy. So they also saw the lottery education fund that Governor Siegelman set up as somewhat of a threat, as an opening to approve gambling in Alabama, to have complete ability to have all types of gaming in Alabama. And they didn't want that to be a wedge so that it might take over or compete against them.
Hurt their bottom line, basically. It would hurt their bottom line.
Yes. Now, most people don't realize, that those Indian casinos gave Jack Abramoff $20 million to stop Siegelman. That was $20 million that they used. And what they did was not just run ads, but made donations to a lot of churches in Alabama, to the preachers, to do their campaigning for them, and that's how they spent their money. And that's, of course, Ralph Reed and the Christian Coalition, by giving money to the churches. And that's just one stage, and it worked incredibly well.
Their
evil plan worked well.
About this, I want you to talk about is I know you talked about the prior. Getting that lifetime appointment. So, they got a person with a lifetime appointment just going to meet Siegelman, So not only that, what about this judge? I mean, this wife-beating judge who during that time got that major contract. That's kind of suspicious, too. It seems like everybody that had the really hands really dirty in the Siegelman case they got rewarded. Here's a guy with a lifetime appointment. Here's another one who's got a private company with a big government contract up in the millions and millions of dollars. It just seems like the same people who subverted the justice system got rewarded for it. By the government.
Exactly, Trump.
So tell us what were some of the things. I know I mentioned some of them. What is the main thing about this documentary that you want people to get? I know you want them to get the whole story because, like we said before, a lot of people don't know all these dynamics because we had this situation here in North Alabama with WHNT. We call it Channel 19. They blacked out when the information was coming out there. And I hardly ever seen anything that would tell both sides of the story from the paper I was getting at the time, which was the Huntsville Times. But I just want you to talk about the media, sort of media blackout in Alabama and how the facts of this case, what got you motivated into doing this documentary, because if you weren't doing this, a lot of things too would be silent right now. The Alabama media just won't talk about it.
So true. Newspapers and television stations are all backed by very conservative media outlets and large corporations. So true. And that WHNT, Channel 19 out of Huntsville, was at the time owned by a company that owns a lot of media outlets. And they were also big supporters of George Bush. And for what,
Hello,
can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Hello?
Yes, I can hear you now. You went out for a second.
Sorry about that.
WHNT 19 and their suspicious blackout.
Yes, well, 60 Minutes did a very effective story that highlighted some of the corruption in the trial. Just a small part of it, but it was a very good story. Well, surprisingly, out of nowhere, 60 Minutes, which airs 7 p.m. on Eastern Standard Time and then 6 p.m. Alabama time, literally they black the story out, just that segment, not the whole show, not the commercials before it, just the segment about Siegelman, which would, of course, expose Karl Rove and Bill Canary, his partner, and several other folks involved with it, Laura Canary, his wife, and Alice Martin, who was another prosecutor. It highlighted all of their parts in the entire conspiracy, but yet this story was completely blacked out in northern part of Alabama. And the newspapers, even during the trial, never supported Siegelman because they are owned by very conservative companies, and they know that they want their candidate to do well. So they, in a sense, always blacked out the story. They always, it always kept the truth from coming out because it would have affected the candidates that they supported and not their adversaries. So they were completely avoiding the objectivity that news is supposed to cover, is supposed to represent, is an objective point of view. But, it's not. It's very tilted, not just the editorials, but they chose not to, let the people know what was really happening. And this has run rampant. This is a rampant, rampant problem in Alabama. It still is.
Yeah, it still is because they're not using the news to educate and inform people so they can make an opinion. They're trying to actually shape the opinion.
Yes, they are. They're tainting the opinion. They are tilting it or shifting it to make their interests, to support their interests, rather than informing the people with objective information. It's all about their money and power and their support. That's what they're supporting, which is sad. It's not the way that it was set up to be. But yet, that's what the people of Alabama are being dealt.
Yeah, and it's, I tell you another thing that's really sad about this whole situation is Steve Sagan's crazy statement about the money was given so Scrooge would be appointed to the CON board. If that were the case, every U.S. president living right now, and a large number of living former presidents and cabinet members and ambassadors, all of them should be in federal prison too. Every last one of them.
Yes.
He did.
Absolutely.
He did
absolutely.
Anything different than all of those guys do all the time.
Exactly. Those donations were just that. They were donations to a 501c3, and nothing went to Siegelman. Absolutely zero of the money went to Siegelman. It just went to the 501c3, and it happens 1,000 times a day across the country. What they said was that Siegelman had given Mr. Scrooge a seat on the CON board, and which was has to do with health care and location and the hospitals and that sort of thing, had given Mr. Scrooge a seat on that board, even though he had been on that board for the previous 12 years and under two previous governors. He didn't even want to be on the board anymore because it took up so much of his time. I've spoken with Mr. Scrooge about this, and he did not want to be on the board at all and asked not to be, but stayed one more year. Also, half of the so-called bribe was given to this lottery education fund after Mr. Scrooge was on the board, after, you know, at the end of his one-year term. So he was going out and yet still made this donation to the lottery education fund. The other half, even though it was given before Mr. Scrooge began his 12th year on the board, was not given by Mr. Scrooge at all. It was given by another company. They just said that Scrooge had given it. It was actually given by a company called Integrated Health Solutions, which has been, I don't know if they went out of business or they were bought up. I'm not sure, but they're no longer here. But at the time, they wrote the check to the Lottery Education Fund. That's all. You know, it wasn't from Mr. Scrooge at all. So there's so many red flags. It just, you know, the whole thing is completely contrived, trumped up charges that should not exist. But, you know, they did get away with it in Alabama because they could. They were in power. Rove had installed people in power in every, as you mentioned it, every corner of the government. So they were able to get away with it. Typically there's oversight in our judicial system, but all the points of oversight in Alabama's judicial system were covered by Republicans installed by Karl Rove. So that's how they got away with it.
And
Siegelman sits in jail for that
Bush
now.
Some of these Bush holdover attorneys are still wreaking havoc in Alabama.
Yes, they are.
Let's go back to this this donation by Scrooge. I mean, how believable is Nick Bailey? His whole entire testimony should be thrown out the window. He was trying to save his behind.
Yes, that's true. He had taken money. He was an assistant to Governor Siegelman, and I've asked Siegelman about Governor Siegelman about this. And it's well known that Nick Bailey was a crook. Even 60 Minutes called him a crook. He was taking money or bribes to try to show favoritism toward different companies for different things. He took the money and. Siegelman, of course, didn't know about it. He would have been fired and prosecuted. But, you know, over time, the prosecutors found that, and they threatened Nick Bailey with almost, I think, 20 or 30 years of jail time if he didn't comply with what they wanted him to do, which was to testify against Don Siegelman. And they even met with him 70 times. I mean, that's ridiculous, 70 times. I've spoken with many prosecutors, and they've all said that is utterly ridiculous. And the most that they had ever met with a client, not a client, but a criminal who was coming up through the criminal justice system was, I think one person said that they had met with one person indicted 10 times. That was the most. But this was 70 times, and the whole time through whistleblower testimony. This isn't speculation for us. This is simply what whistleblowers have said, that they scripted the entire testimony of Nick Bailey to testify against Don Siegelman. And that was not allowed, that was not admitted into court. None of the notes that he wrote during those 70 meetings, which are supposed to be admitted as evidence, were, they came up missing. Another thing is that the check that was written to the Lottery Education Fund, they said was dated on the same time as a meeting occurred, but it wasn't. They had, you know, it was all of the governor's meetings are registered, you know, time and dates, and the check was dated weeks later. So, but the prosecution said that it occurred on the day of the meeting. So that they lied and they knew it. The prosecution knew that that was a lie. The prosecution made up this false testimony, number two. The prosecution, number three, that did not allow the notes from their interrogation with Nick Bailey and their coaching sessions with him to occur. That's, you know, those are three big things, not to mention that his testimony, Nick Bailey, that's all the evidence that they had against Siegelman. That's it. There was no other evidence whatsoever to convict him with. And
even,
but yet it was allowed
even,
to occur.
I need to put you off, but even Nick Bailey's friend, remember Amy Methvin? She said that Bailey told her he was going to parrot the prosecutor's line about a pay-for-play and a quid pro quo. And Methvin, Bailey's friend, also said that he just went into a speech about money exchange for favors, and she told him, you sound like a robot. And he told him, he supposed to have told her, by her statement, that if he had, if she had heard the answers as many times as he had, it would be the same thing with her. So they, you know, they ruined him into exactly what to say to put the nails in the coffin and to save his own behind.
Yes, exactly.
He sung like a false bird.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is, and there's no. It's true. I mean, it's it gets even deeper than that. It's but it was a false testimony. You know, they and the judge allowed it because the judge was, you know, an opponent of Don Siegelman. He was someone that Rove put in there as a hanging judge, and he allowed this nonsense to, you know, to be admitted into the trial. And you know, without it, there was literally no case. There's nothing against Don Siegelman without his testimony. So he had to allow it.
So that brings us to tell us more about what brings us into that, about this judge with a grudge. What is his, I want you to tell my listeners what this judge, this wife-beating judge, Mark Fuller, what is his main beef and what started his beef and just hatred and grudge against Don Siegelman?
Yeah, well, the name is Judge Mark Fuller, and he had been, you know, he had been an opponent or adversary of Don Siegelman for years. You know, he was, you know, they both had found candidates from opposing parties to run against each other for, you know, various statewide offices and some local offices. So there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of opposition and tenseness and animosity between the two. But the real sticking point was when Governor Siegelman found that Mark Fuller had misappropriated about $300,000 of state retirement money. He had spiked the retirement for someone who worked with him for, you know, for various reasons, but spiked his retirement fund, and it would have been almost $300,000 that he didn't deserve. I mean, almost doubled his salary for the final 2 years of his employment with the state, which is unheard of, you know, because that's what they derive your retirement from. So, yes. So anyway, Siegelman found that he had done this through an audit of someone that Siegelman had appointed. And they didn't file charges, but it was very embarrassing. I mean, it shows that, you know, the guy is, you know, a crook. The guy is, he's not going to stop at anything. He's just going to do whatever he wants to do and get in, try to get away with it. Well, those are two reasons, you know, because they were political opponents, because Siegelman and Kahn. Those are two real reasons a judge recused himself, but of course he didn't. You know, it was he was appointed to this case, I don't think by accident. He also, while he was in office, not office, but when he was on the bench, he owned a side business called DOS Aviation. And DOS Aviation worked off of government contracts, specifically off of the Air Force contracts and their association with Maxwell Air Force Base, which is just outside of Montgomery. Well, during the trial, of the Siegelman trial, on the day the defense rested, DOS Aviation, who had their previously, you know, just the year before, 1 or 2 years before, had their primary address as Judge Fuller's courthouse chambers, they received a check on the day that the defense closed, or the prosecution closed. They received a contract for $178 million. $178 million. And it turned out that one of the prosecutors, Stephen Faga, worked at, on the also part-time work for the Air Force Reserve. He still was in the reserve for the Air Force in the JAG unit. And of course they, I don't know that he did it specifically, but JAGs are, you know, are lawyers who write, they write contracts. I don't, like I say, I don't know that he actually wrote or approved the contract, but at least he has associations with that part of the Air Force. The and issue, that $178 million? Oh, huge. I mean, and, but yet that no one knew until after the trial. But, you know, through digging, we found that. Through, actually, it was one of my sources found this. Unbelievable.
Hold on for just a minute. We're going to take a quick minute break, and we're going to come back. And what we're going to talk about is this next level that Don is about to face, his next court date and things like that. Hold on the other side of this minute or so. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Today, let's take a trip to Alabama, always one of America's favorite vacation destinations. During the 1960s, busloads full of Northern civil rights activists would head down south. They must have liked it. Heck, some of them never returned. Its capital, Montgomery, was the birthplace of the Confederacy. The capital was moved to Virginia a few months later, but Alabama avenged this slight by continuing to fight the Civil War for another 100 years. In 1963, Governor George Wallace tried to block school integration by physically standing in the schoolhouse doors of the University of Alabama. This brings up a point which needs to be made. Alabama actually has a system of post-secondary education. Alabama compares favorably with other states in many rankings. It rates first as the state with the weakest environmental protections. The EPA says the state is only the sixth most polluted, but their pulp mills and chemical plants are working night and day to catch up. So the next time you're looking for a great getaway, don't fight the crimson tide. Come on down to Alabama. They'll put on fresh sheets for you.
Okay, we're back. I know I said we was going to talk about the next level that Don was about to go through, but I want to go back to further than that. I want to go back to this. Can you tell us about this House Judiciary meeting that they had and the one that Karl Rove is all trying to claim executive privilege, but he says he'll testify but not under oath. I mean, that right there, when somebody tells you that, that lets you know that they got something to hide.
Absolutely. He literally ignored his subpoena to testify before the House Judiciary Committee. Ignored, I mean, through complete arrogance, ignored a subpoena, a federal subpoena. He later said that he would not testify under oath, although he did testify. It was in closed-door sessions that there was no recording of the meeting, and it was not under oath. So he could have, you know, whistled Dixie, you know, in there, and it wouldn't make any difference. You know, he can recite poems, you know, and it would have as much relevance. You know, it was nothing to go on. So, of course, he had a lot to hide, and he didn't want to be held liable for for anything, because I was obviously the, you know, he was guilty. And that's the whole thing, is that's the, as you mentioned in the very first of the broadcast, the irony. It's the irony is that the guy who did not do anything wrong is in jail, and the people who are so corrupt that put him there are still out, not only out of jail, but haven't been charged and are still doing the same nonsense, the same corrupt things, same tactics that they were before. And that's why we're doing this documentary. I mean, we can't think of a better reason to do a documentary than to expose people who not only did this, but are continuing to do it. It's the conspiracy of corrupt dunces, I guess is the best way to put it. I say that off of the book Confederacy of Dunces, but Karl Rove is behind all of this, and we have enough to show and prove that it did happen, and we're going to tell the world about it.
I just wonder if ever, I think the whole key to this thing is getting, number one, getting all those ballots looked at, not just the Dunn-Sigelman race, but they could have done this sort of thing in other races that people really didn't realize, but getting all those ballots from that election, just audited and gone over and look at it and hand counted, get that and get Karl Rove under oath, under penalty of perjury, get him on the stand, and get also this prosecutor who just for some reason had to be forced out from the case, and for some reason saw it fit to keep her nose in it. Get those things out there, and we just could crack the case. I have a little hope, since I know Chuck Schumer, at the time when they was having this judiciary committee hearing about the Dunn-Sigelman case, that he seemed like he was one that was really pushing to get the answers. And now that Harry Reid is about to exit stage left, I wonder if Schumer, with his ascendance to power, does he still have this on his mind? Now, I don't know nothing about that, but I saw him as very brave in that whole situation and pushing for answers. I just wonder, does he have this in the back of his mind at the forefront, and once he get in actual power position, will he get to the bottom of this? Because there's a lot going on here.
Yes, well, Rove, as you know, has very good lawyers. So they're going to do everything in their power to not ever have to be under oath to talk about it. There are several ways that something could come about it, but you know, I think they're savvy enough, or at least the people, the attorneys working for them, will know how to at least dodge and stall and, you know, divert attention as much as they can. To avoid such a thing. But if the truth ever came out, the hard truth, of course they would be, you know, they should be in jail. You know, there's no question about it. Every former prosecutor that I've spoken with has said that the people behind this should be in jail for what they've done to Dunn-Sigelman. And that's where they do belong. But unfortunately, that probably won't happen. But with a little luck and well-said prayers, maybe it's possible. But doubtful.
Okay, I'm gonna ask you another question that I had a lot of people inboxing me on Facebook that wanted me to ask you. I haven't really thought about it. I should know this. I'm gonna seem crazy for asking this, but what type of judgment does Sigelman need to be able to re-enter politics, even if he has to do all of this time, or is he done by a certain Alabama statute that he can never come back, and with a full pardon, expungement, clemency, and all that? Is there something out there that when this is all over and said and done, and it goes in his favor, even if the criminals who did it are never brought to justice, if he is given justice, what would it take for him to re-enter politics, or is he done as far as politics? Because I know he's not done as far as public policy, because he was one of the best. He'll never be done. He's got too many supporters out there like you and me and the Free Dunn-Sigelman movement and many others. So is there anything, any way possible that he could ever re-enter Alabama politics?
Absolutely. He's actually, in some areas, electable. I mean, now, if he were to be released, he has enough support. And I think, you know, a lot of Alabamans realized that he was, you know, given a very bad deal. You know, he was, you know, he was treated incorrectly and wrongly charged. But he is, from what a lot, and this question's come around quite a bit, but he is electable still in Alabama. But he won't be out as it is now. The earliest he would be out would be 2017, sometime, because they do give you a 10% off for good behavior. So I think he would be out sometime in 2017, which means he could run in 2018. Which I don't know if it would. Yeah, I don't know that the governor's race is in 2018, but you know, for something else, yeah, he's electable too. I just firmly believe that, and I think after this movie comes out, people will see just how bad. At least it'll explain everything that happened to him, and it's gonna be objective. We're gonna have the experts, you know, explain exactly what happened to him, and we're gonna use solid evidence and substantiated evidence, and also whistleblower testimony to prove this, you know, and to Alabama voters and throughout the nation too. This is a national problem. This, even though it happened in Alabama, this is something that it's a national problem, because those players can affect the national discourse. So
sure can. Just in like in the famous words of was it Dan Abrams? You know, this is a scar and a black eye and a dark cloud over American justice system. It's bad.
Yes.
And we need to.
Yes, it's a deep stain.
Or either just shut up talking about justice.
Yes.
I tell a lot of people. I mean, I loved how they're about to get their own political views, but I loved we had our first black president. I love everything Obama has done, even how he's handled the Middle East. He's been hard-handed when he's had to, and he's opened up dialogue even with the enemy to try to bring some type of peace and civility. But I also want to say this. I am highly, as a black person coming from Alabama, I am highly pissed off at Obama and Eric Holder. To me, yes, they broke grounds with their election and their appointments, but that's going to be a scar on them in my mental note of them as an African-American. They let me down on that part. I was glad to have them come in. It was a historic moment for both. But in the end, in its totality, everything I can say good about them, I have to revert back to they let the African-Americans who voted for Don Siegelman, 90%, they let them down in Alabama, and basically the whole national party did. I mean, Don Siegelman is the type of guy, look at him winning down here in the South, a popular governor, Democratic governor, down here in the South. So, yes, he was a problem, a serious problem to the Republicans. But the Democrats, he should have been a very serious ally and political weapon. So the way they are not really just going after, I know there's people doing things behind the scenes, but the way they're not just really bogarting this and putting it up there front and center is just shocking to me. And even the Alabama Democrats, I mean, he is the most powerful man that was in your party, brought in industry, manufacturing, fought for education for children, and then now all of a sudden this crooked system set up with the tentacles of Karl Rove, took him down with a $20 million war chest. And I just say the Alabama Democratic Party needed to get it together. Now, I called for them to come together and settle what little beef they had. I called Reed and also Kennedy. I called them through a newspaper, Alabama Political Reporter. The article's still there, to sit down and try to work this out, do some conflict resolution. But in my opinion, the Alabama Democratic Party is not going to do any good until Sigmund is freed. It's just plain and simple. Now, what they can do is forget all the little petty things that they got going on right now with personalities and rally behind a cause that's worth fighting, a cause to get your to free and bring justice to your leader. Now, if you don't do that, there's no hope for you. In my book, I just look at a good, just like in sports, is a good team. What good is a good team if you don't have any leader? It is no good. And if, until they fix that, the Alabama Democratic Party is going to have problems. And Don Siegel is a worthy cause. It's a just cause. And there has been 113, as of today, attorney generals from around the nation, from both Democrat and Republican, who says this case stinks. Now, if they can't rally behind that together, then they're doomed. They are doomed. And I just want to say that this is a good cause that they need to rally behind. They can come together, especially at a time down in Montgomery when Speaker of the House is going through charges of corruption and others. There have been some others go through corruption. I think one's just recently stepped down for some things that he did. But now the time is ripe for them to talk about what happened to Dunn. They can rally behind the cause and have the backing of all these political and legal experts, along with the 113 former and current attorney generals behind them. They should be out in front with this thing. They got 113 people that they can bring in here one by one every other week to talk about, give them the platform to talk about what happened to Dunn Sigmund and why they signed this letter to the Supreme Court to have this case looked at. Now, if they can't rally behind that, I mean, like I said, they're in serious trouble. They're in very serious trouble. And this is a cause that they all we all can agree on. Let's come together, Democrats, and rally behind Don Siegelman and fight for his freedom and expose the criminals that did this. And if they can't do that, it's basically over. What do you think about that?
Well, sure, it would be great if that's what we're trying to do is we're trying to rally the troops, so to speak, and get people involved, get them interested and wanting to participate in, you know, bringing justice to this. I mean, it's, you know, we want to not only inform them of what happened, but also to prevent it from ever happening again. And also expose, you know, those who are guilty for it. And hopefully this will spark some type of, you know, action from people to make this right. You know, there's people are going to be surprised at the depth of corruption that pervades politics, not just in Alabama, but nationwide. And that's what we want to expose. We want to expose it and show what's happened, but we're going to use the case of Don Siegelman as a vehicle to highlight all those levels of corruption. And I don't think that it's ever been done before to highlight all of the, you know, all levels of it from Washington to, you know, not just to Montgomery, but to many other state capitals around the country. I don't think that it's ever been, you know, consolidated and explained within a single, you know, unified context. And that's what we're attempting to do, but it's under the Don Siegelman story that is a perfect example or a perfect opportunity for us to combine all of those corrupt forces combine the story about really those corrupt forces.
Yes, that's true. I really appreciate this film, and it's exactly what we need right now. Right now, I'm going to check. I think I got a friend on the line. I'm going to check and see if he's still there and see if he may have a question. Darren, you there?
Hi, I'm Marcus. I'm here.
Okay, well, you have any questions you want to ask about Steve Wimmer or any comments you want to make about Don Siegelman concerning anything he's done? And Mr. Wimmer, this is Darren Lyles. He's a famous athlete and coach and a politician here in Lawrence County. And he may want to give some comments on this situation.
Well, I'll say I'm a recovering politician, Marcus. I didn't win, but I'll say this, and I might have missed it. I got I went in the store to get me a Coke, but why doesn't President Obama pardon him? He has the power to do that.
That's a great question. You know, that's been asked many, many times. Why hasn't he pardoned? Why hasn't Obama pardoned him? Well, we don't know. He's pardoned the least number of people of any modern president. That's what we do know. And he does know well. He knows about this case. He also has, he's being. Siegelman's lawyers are very competent, and they turn out to be Obama's lawyers. Greg Craig and Clifford Sloan are two of the top lawyers at a law firm called Skadden. And I don't know, you know, how it went about, but Don's knew Greg Craig from years before. And Greg Craig is, of course, Obama's lawyer. So there's, I don't think it's coincidence that he's doing this pro bono for Governor Siegelman. So, you know, we do have that. He does have that going for him, but why he hasn't pardoned him, I just don't know.
Well, do you think, I could tell you this right here, and this came up in a conversation. It may have to be double-checked, but I'm absolutely sure that Attorney General Eric Holder mentioned something about that he wasn't going to deliver a pardon while the appeal process was in play. Now, did you hear that, Mr. Wimley?
Yes, I've heard that before, but, you know, the appeals process, there's no end to that. I mean, you can appeal for anything. I mean, that's just an ongoing thing forever and ever. You know, that's so the appeals, say that the appeals process have ended, you know, this, he's not going to stop appealing, you know, just, you know, hopefully something, you know, will, you know, stick in the U.S. 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. But, of course, the deck is, as you say, stacked against him completely in that, because it's one of the most conservative circuit courts in America, Circuit Court of Appeals. So, his chances are so small.
When I was told that, the first thing I said, in relation to what you're saying, Darren, the first thing I said was, isn't Obama the president? What does it matter if he can just end it right now and forget an appeal?
Yes, there are some.
We should have that power. I mean, does he have that power to just step in? Hey, regardless of any appeal, free this man, clemency, all charges expunged, dropped, and disappear. Now, if he's got that kind of power, then that's what I got a problem with, why he's not using it. Forget the appeal. Just do what you know is right.
There are some parameters that he has to follow for appeals. I don't have them in front of me, but it's not a carte blanche, although he could probably get away with it. There are certain things that, you know, he has to wait for criminal appeals. He has to wait until a specific period of time, and they have to be under certain conditions. But I don't think they're completely rigid, but I think there's a, you know, he could if he wanted to, but I think it would, I guess it would, wouldn't violate them, but I think if they're suggested, you know, the parameters, I think that he would have to go around those suggested parameters. So I don't know exactly, you know, what they have in mind, or if they just want to say we trust in the judicial system and we want to try to let it, you know, run its course.
Let me make this statement right here, and it might sound kind of like a conspiracy theory, but there's some meat behind every conspiracy. You might not have heard this, but I've heard this in certain circles. What if, like you said before, Don Siegelman, a moderate? So is there an element of, I guess, progressive or hard, left-leaning people who don't really care, I mean, left-wing Democrat people who really don't care what happens to Don Siegelman, because he is a moderate. And I got to say this, too, about the Democratic Party. I'm more in line with some of the things they do and talk about, but we have our extreme people, too. And we've seen this, too, when it happened to Don Siegelman, how everybody just took tail and ran, and I don't even know how many politicians flip-flopped to the other side. And it just seemed like they ran and hid in the corner. And what I'm trying to do with this, you know, promoting this documentary and speaking about this issue is to tell the Democrats, come on out. Come on out of the corner. Everything's okay right now. You know, so, and I can understand them hiding in the corner. I mean, if they can set up the judicial system and railroad your top man, the governor, you know, if they can do that, I know it would scare some little congressman on his first or second term or some senator on the same thing. But it's okay to come out now. Okay, you have any thoughts about that? Mr. Wembley.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
As I was saying, do you believe the time is right for the Democrats, the time is right and the time is okay for them to just start this rally? We need to start rallying people. We need to start getting in touch with these district attorneys, not district attorneys, but attorney generals, and have them come out and talk more. Darren, sort of like rallying the troops to get everybody back on this case, putting this case front and center, because we have a lot to go on. And like I said, the Democrats, this is something that they all can fight for and help heal the party. Think that'd be a good idea? Hello, Darren. Okay, I think he's having some phone problems. But now let's get back to what we was talking about. This next level and this next phase that Dunn is about to go through concerning his trial. What's up next for Dunn, Mr. Wembley?
Yeah, we were awaiting their decision. Which could take it could happen any time, or meaning, you know, it could be 2 or 3 years from now. It was heard in January, and there's no schedule or plan for when it will be. They will render their decision either way. So they could give him a new trial. They could also force the release of certain documents from the Department of Justice, or they can just decline altogether. So there's there's actually several other possibilities that of how they could the judgment they could render. So it's difficult to know exactly how they or what to expect. But there are two Republicans, they have a three judge review panel for the Court of Appeals, and it's three. You know, if you get two out of three to review a case, it's based on those three judges. And we're just awaiting their verdict, and it could happen any time. And it could be now, or it could be, you know, it could be 2 years from now. So we're just anxiously awaiting something.
And okay.
His three-court panel were two Republicans and one Democrat, or at least judges appointed by two were appointed by Republicans, and one was appointed by Obama. So,
yeah, that's we're gonna take a quick break. I'm gonna look at what's going on with this caller. I'm having some problems with a call in. But when I come back, I'm gonna ask you about. I want you to tell us something about this Justice Department's answer when they were. Accused that it framed Sigmund, and they tried to say that it was done by career prosecutors, and he was convicted in a fair trial by a jury of his peers. Now, that's coming from the Justice Department. And, when we come back on the other side of this break, I want to talk about that because Scott Horton, you familiar with Scott Horton? He says that career prosecutors advised against this case because they concluded that it was a political vendetta, and then they walked away from it. I'm going to take this break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk more about these crazy The 99 Shades of Crazy of Alabama Politics. We'll be right back to bring in voices to power. Okay, we're back. with Bringing Voices to Power, and we're talking with Steve Wimberly, executive producer and director at Pepper Tree Films, about his Don Siegelman documentary, Killing Atticus Finch. So I want to check this. Dan, are you there?
I am.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I had to get your phone thing straightened out there. Dan, before we went to the break, I was asking Steve about this absurd thing coming out of the Justice Department where they said that Siegelman was indicted by career prosecutors and convicted in a fair trial by a jury of his peers. Now, I don't know what they call fair, but everything that's laid out in Steve Wimberly's documentary and what we just discussed early on this show is makes that statement totally ridiculous. Steve, you want to say something about that?
Yes, I mean it's the whole ordeal that Siegelman has been through is just ridiculous. But as far as the you're asking about the appeals process.
No, I was talking about at the very beginning when I asked about Siegelman being framed. I'm not asking about. I'm talking about the original prosecution. How they said that it was fair. You know, we had Laura Canary all in the case, so that's the point the Justice Department was trying to make, was he had a fair trial. And I'm just saying, according to the facts in your documentary, the trial was not fair because of all these people had conflicts of interest and had something to gain out of Siegelman's conviction.
Sure. Well, you know, people say that, you know, you've been tried and convicted by a jury of your peers, that implies a fair trial, and that's not what happened. The deck was stacked against him from the very beginning, even before the charges were filed. They first went out and when they didn't find anything through numerous investigations, they filed trumped-up charges against him. One time, that charge was thrown out by a judge who said it was the most baseless charge he had seen in his 30 years on the bench. When that didn't work, they filed another set of charges. Yes, it was E.W. Clemon. There was a second set after that was thrown out, just not long after it. But this time it was a different prosecutor, and this prosecutor was the wife of Don Siegelman's the wife of the campaign manager of Don Siegelman's opponent, Laura Canary. And then she filed these trumped-up charges. But in order to make these trumped-up charges stick, they went judge shopping and found a corrupt judge who allowed the charges to stick in court, and then allowed the almost kangaroo farcical trial to occur, where they let anything stick against Siegelman. And, you know, there was numerous improper jury instructions. They allowed false evidence. They tampered with the jurors, believe it or not. They gave false jury instructions. I mean, it's just a long staggering list of judicial and abuses and prosecutorial misconduct. They bribed a judge. It just went on and on and on. So the deck has been stacked against him from the very beginning, and they're still stacked against him for his appeal. The rule of law has been completely subverted just to get rid of one of their political opponents.
Yeah, and that's why it goes to back to I'm gonna take it back to the Democrats and rallying for Don Siegelman. Once you know, you get into this documentary and you get into what happened. This man, Don Siegelman, he was very, very dangerous to Republicans. They feared Don Siegelman so much that they got together a $20 million war chest to destroy one man. Now,
yes,
we should realize how powerful Don Siegelman is, and we should be fighting for Don Siegelman to get him his freedom back, because right now the shape that Alabama is in and the shape that the Alabama Democratic Party is in, we need Don Siegelman. We need Don Siegelman free, and we need Don Siegelman with boots on the ground back in the fight. Now, I'm going to ask Darren. Darren.
Hello?
Hey, Darren.
Yeah, can I say something?
Go ahead. You got the floor, my man.
This is the history teacher in me coming out, and I'll say this, and then don't comment any way you want to, but after the Boston Tea Party, the British passed what was known as the Intolerable Acts, and what they said was, they're going to close Boston Harbor, you can't meet in public, you got to quarter troops, and you got a curfew. And so the other 12 colonists who were in love with their own colony more so than the whole group said, if they can do that to Boston, they can do that to us. I think Democrat or Republican, American above all, everybody ought to be pissed that they've done this to anybody. This is right up there with the Scottsboro boys. This is opinion, and that's just relating to the history teacher coming out of me as I sit here and listen to it. So that's my comment. So.
Well, and that's very true. You know, the Scottsboro boys are turning the frame up. And that's exactly. They, you know, those two can be compared is when your government or the people in power can totally pervert justice and twist it any way they want. Okay, Steve,
Marcus,
I want you to give our listeners a way, tell them how they can support this documentary and what you're doing.
Yes, well, the film is called Killing Atticus Finch, and we have a page set up on GoFundMe / Don Siegelman Film. And they can go there to read all about the case that we have and the film that we're going to make, and also how to donate to make the film. And people can become a part of it. You can actually, become a part of the movement, and people will listen to your comments. They will read your comments, and people can play a part. And we would love for as many people as possible to be a part of the journey. Please check out our webpage and leave a comment and a donation if you would like to. But again, it's called Killing Atticus Finch, and the website is GoFundMe.com/ Don Siegelman Film. And you can Google it, and it'll come up, GoFundMe Don Siegelman.
Okay, that's great information for all my listeners. But, the other thing I want to talk about is all the successes that Don Siegelman had. And I know at the time that we were getting into the lottery, the state was facing some shortfalls. And I just want to talk more about the Christian Coalition. I just want to know how you feel about the Christian groups who was a part of this frame up and all for it, but who also were taking money from the tribes across the state lines.
Sure, they were taking money. As a matter of fact, the Republican Party now is in no small part funded by gambling money, even though they say that, the Christian groups say that gambling is bad. And they used $20 million from these casinos to give to, and I say they, Jack Abramoff and Karl Rove and Ralph Reed took $20 million of this casino money. And a lot of it was given to churches as donations. And those churches would in turn preach against the badness of gambling. So it was, gambling money was fueling this whole thing, and so the churches were actually campaigning against the lottery. Church preachers and church administrators, and a lot of people didn't realize it was because they had received large donations to do so, especially these mega churches. So. That is in essence what a lot of what they were doing, the Christian Coalition, was taking gambling money and giving it to churches to preach against the state lottery.
By them doing that, they need to listen to their own words about being hypocrites. because when it comes down to that matter, they were some of the worst.
Yes, yes, they were. And also, I'm going to wait here in just a moment, but yes, that is a big part of what the money was used for. And it wasn't, for advertising. I'm sure there were some ads that ran against them, but by and large, it was done through grassroots, going to churches and having other leaders throughout, Alabama, put it down and, try to get people to vote against it, because it was a referendum. It was a vote that Alabamans voted against eventually, it lost. And that's how they defeated it, was through, the Christian coalition's influence on churches.
Yeah, and they managed to plant the bad seeds out there, but like we were just saying, $20 million for one man, that can buy a whole lot of positions, that can buy a whole lot of friends, and they can get you a whole bunch of contracts. So
yes,
he was,
yes,
like I said, Sigmund was up against, a radio machine, a well-oiled, financed $20 million machine, really, and this is, in my view, based out of Texas in Washington, D.C. They had to take Sigmund down. He was too powerful, because I actually feel the next step for Sigmund was the White House. So that's why I kind of feel like some of the left-leaning Democrats, they may have breathed a sigh of relief.
Yes. Yes, indeed. He was. He had his sights on the White House. He was a popular Democrat in a very Republican state, and that's something that was duly noted not only by his adversaries and his opponents, but also by the Democratic Party as well. So it was easy to see that he would have been a good fit, because he had done so well against the opposition. He was almost unbeatable, and it was because of his. He was very likable. He was very honest. He had an unblemished record, always won, just about always. I think he lost one election. But he was, he was a natural a fit for Washington. And they, of course, wanted to get him out of the way before that happened. So, I'm going to have to I have to break away. I've got a meeting here. In just a few minutes.
Well, I really enjoyed this conversation with you, and we're going to keep on pushing the documentary, and we're going to keep on having this subject at the forefront. And I look forward to working with you in the future. And if you know of anybody else connected with the Freedom of Don out here listening, knows anybody that's connected with the Freedom of Don Sigmund, please give them a number, inbox me at this show, or you pass on any information you can, because they're welcome to come on here and continue to fight for justice.
Well, I will, and thank you very much for having me on the show.
Thank you so much, Mr. Wimley, for coming on the show, and you're always welcome back.
Oh, well, thank you, and thank you very much for having me on the show, and we'll continue working for Don Siegelman, and the film will be out hopefully by the end of next year. And please stay tuned and visit our website at GoFundMe.com / Don Siegelman film, and or you can just Google Siegelman and GoFundMe, and it'll pop right up.
Okay, well, we'll do exactly that.
Okay, well,
and
thanks again. I really appreciate it, Marcus.
Well, appreciate you, sir.
All right. Take care. All right.
You take care, too.
Marcus,
Dan, you there? Dan, go ahead. We're literally about to fall now, but me and you, we can have a little small discussion if you want to. You had to go to a meeting. I'm just thankful to have him for that period of time. But you got something you want to add to this?
Yeah, because I don't really know. I know I can Google it when I get off here. But why the title Atticus Finch?
That's a good question, but I guess it relates to that. Were you familiar with the movie and the character and what he was fighting for? Justice, right? The only thing he was fighting for was justice. And so, I'm just guessing. I'm not going to tell his entire, what he believes in it. This is what I myself personally took from it. I've seen it as killing Atticus Finch is really killing the fight for justice.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Because all this thing is, all this thing is coming down through how the Justice Department under Bush was corrupted.
Okay,
and so
I,
and
I see that.
It's for justice. So here they are, you know, killing someone in essence, politically assassinating them, a person that stood for justice. That's my point of view, take on it.
That's okay. I didn't know. I didn't know that his speech was. I didn't. Okay, but I can do good. I'm good. So.
You ever seen that, I think it was To Kill a Mockingbird?
Yeah, I remember that from high school, but I'm a
yes,
way out.
Atticus Finch was the lawyer, defense lawyer on that film.
Okay, then I'll read up on it. I'll figure it out.
Okay, man, it was great having you. It was great having you on, man. I got to set up something else. Tomorrow, man, is going to be a great show. This is going to be a real great show because I'm going to have in a very important person that is trying to fight for justice. You know, when it comes to all these people in jail with marijuana, I'm going to have Morgan Fox of the Marijuana Policy Project based out of Washington, D.C., and Morgan Fox is their communications manager. And with all this stuff going on down there in Montgomery, you know, we got Carly's Law and we got some other laws coming through. They're sort of tweaking and trying to get this marijuana thing right. And just a few days ago, they came in with some type of unscientific marijuana DUI. So already they're trying to see how they can get their hands on some money if this thing does go through. So I'll have this Mr. Fox on tomorrow, and we're going to touch on that subject a little bit. It's been great talking with you, and, man, you're always free to call in, man. Come on in sometimes, man. So, man, you can co-host the show all day long on any subject. Now, get back with me about the sports deal we was talking about the other day.
Sure.
And I'm going to be talking to you. So I'm going to be talking to you real soon about that.
the knocks off. Now is the time to knock all of the locks off. We've been locked down, learning the rock salt, and trying to get rock salt. We're dodging the rock salt from the law. And I done saw it all. So I'm cut this first check, so I'm bars, so I'm fall like D-Rose. But you won't stand tall when your knee goes flips and snitch on your amigos. So far from that kid that my race set. Heated up the wash up tub with hot plates. I gotta be great, I gotta grind smarter. I don't think they hear me, I gotta knock harder. Let me in.
It used to be big families. Now all we want is two or three offspring. Inflation did this, you see. Not enough underpaid. Gotta work two jobs these days. 9 to 5, 6 to 10. And then you gotta
do it again.
It's a hard knock life.
It's a hard knock life.
It's getting pretty rough out here.
It's a hard knock life.
It's gonna be tough out here.
It's a hard knock life.
It's a hard knock life.
It's a hard knock life.
It's a hard knock life out here. Yeah, gotta keep spirits high, even though you're just getting by. 'Cause you were left with no help
all by yourself.
He walked away, didn't stay. Now you're home all alone.
Didn't think he was the enemy.
He left you with 2 miles to feed. It's a hard knock life.
It's a hard knock life.
No one said it would be easy.
It's a hard knock life.
And no one said it would be fair.
It's a hard knock life.
Daddy told me that no one.
It's a hard knock life.
That no one really cared. 40 years ain't enough. So give me.
Shoot over the hood, and I ain't met a damn thing yet that can stop me. No matter where they drop me at, I'm good. You ever seen a rose grow up out of the concrete? Ever seen a comet shoot over the hood? It don't really matter where I'm at, I'm me. You can bet your life on me, I'm good.
Yeah, it's a hard knock life out here, but you gotta learn to make the best of it. You dig? Do it.
Go out and get that Ken Orr latest album, Adenum, and you can check out The Hard Knock Life.